Rosh Hashanah Daf Chav Ches. We are on Chav Zayin Amud Beis. We are with the last two words, Amar Rava, coming off of a mission yesterday that went over a number of scenarios in which the shofar is not going to be good, either because there is a defect with the shofar itself, or the sound that's produced is unacceptable, or the person who heard it did not have kavanah in any one of those circumstances. So the shofar will not be good. We are right now in the middle of the Mishnah, or discussing the middle of the Mishnah, in which there is something wrong with the sound. Notably, you're not hearing the sound directly, but rather you're hearing the sound bouncing off of another item, otherwise known as an echo. Under those circumstances, the Mishnah says one has not fulfilled his obligation. Amar Rava, as we are now starting with today's daf, on the very top of Chaf Chesim and Aleph, Shema, Mixas Tikiya Babor, Mixas Tri'i Tikiya Al-Sfas Abor. You heard part of the sound of the shofar in the pit, and part of it above the pit, yeah, so you have fulfilled your obligation. At this point in time, we think that the person blowing the shofar is in one location, and it's right now the shomea, the one listening, who is basically bobbing his head in and out of the pit. And presumably, wherever he is and the shofar is not, is the area which he's not going to be yotzei. And at this point in time, we are going to struggle a little bit in terms of understanding Rava based on this Havamina. In a little bit, the Gemara is going to be changing its assumption regarding what the case is, but right now, that's what we think the case is. Mixas tikiya kodem shi'a la'amod ha'shachar, mixas tikiya la'achar shi'a la'amod ha'shachar, lo yatsa. If you heard the tikiya before amod ha'shachar, and a second half of the tikiya after amod ha'shachar, under those circumstances, lo yatsa, you have not fulfilled your obligation. Now, we know that a tikiya ha'shofar has to be done during the day. One of the mitzvahs that is kashu l'chol ha'yom, we'll discuss at the end of the Masechta that there's more appropriate time to do it during the day. But nevertheless, according to the strict letter of the law, it can be done at any point during the day. And then we know that the day halachically begins at dawn. Now, there are a couple of minutes mitzvahs that are delayed a little bit past dawn. But right now, just to keep everything simple, so the mitzvah of shofar can be done any point from dawn and on, from alos, hashachar, and onward. So the Mishnah over here is describing a scenario in which you blew part of the shofar pre-dawn, which obviously is not a zman in which one could fulfill his mitzvah, and part of the shofar was blown after dawn. Under those circumstances, you have not fulfilled your obligation. So basically what we seem to be contrasting over here is two scenarios. Each of the scenarios, half of the tekiah was done bekashrus, and half of it was not done bekashrus. And the problem, of course, is that in the first scenario, where we're talking about the person himself is in and out of the pit, so he is yotzei. And meanwhile, in the second scenario, where part of the shofar was before dawn and part after, he was not yotzei. And the Gemara now is going to share with us its confusion. Amalei Abayi Maishna, what's the difference? Hasam debina kula tkiya bechiyuv avaleka. So in the first case, don't you need the whole scenario to be in the state of chiyuv? You don't have it. Hachanami bina kula tkiya bechiyuv avaleka. So the whatever conclusion we are in one scenario, we should be in the same conclusion in the other scenario as well. Because right now it seems to be equivalent. Both scenarios have it where you are hearing only half the sound bekashrus. Hachiyash, the Gemara says the cases are not comparable. Hasam laila lav zman chiyuvahu klal. So the Gemara tries to draw the following distinction that when you're blowing pre-dawn, that's laila, and therefore it is just simply not a zman of tkiya at all. However, when it comes to the boar, so at least for those people that are in the boar, so that is considered makam chiyuva. Happens to be that you currently are not in the boar, but at least it is possible that somebody could fulfill his mitzvah with the tekiah that's done in the boar. So the Gemara says, okay, lemeimer d'savar rava shama sof tekiah below tchilas tekiah yatsa, umimela tchilas tekiah below sof tekiah yatsa. So the Gemara now is going to review a point that it made yesterday. It certainly sounds like that, according to Rava, as long as you hear half of a kol, doesn't matter if it's first half or second half, you're going to be yotzei tashma. So the Gemara is going to go over the same points that we went over yesterday, in that the Mishnahs do not seem to bear at this point. Consider the following. First, a Mishnah. Takab Rishonah Mashach Mishnah, Kishtayim, and Biado Alachas. So the scenario that we went over yesterday, so for the tekiah that's done at the end of the first series, you go long with it, long enough that it could serve as two tekiahs, and you want to now apply it towards the end of tekiah for series number one, and the beginning of the tekiah for series number two. So the Mishnah says you can only count it as one. And the Gemara asks the question, so why not count it as two? Meaning, if you're telling me that a half of a tkiah is acceptable, so why can't we just call this a half of a tkiah that would apply to one, and the second half would apply to the second? So the Gemara's answer is very simple, like we said yesterday. So although, if you hear half of a tkiah b'kashrus, that would count as one. Over here, maybe you can count them as two, but there is no break in the middle, and what the halacha will not manufacture is a break in the middle. If there's an actual break in the middle, that's great, but the halacha will not just simply ignore the fact that there is no break in the middle. Tashma, the Gemara says, okay, let's do this again. It's okay, l'tocha bor, l'tocha dul, l'tocha pitaf. Im kol shofar shama yatsa, im kol havara shama lo yatsa. So we're going to now go over our Mishnah. Our Mishnah says that if you blow the shofar in a pit, so you have not been yotzei. So the Gemara now assumes that before the echo, what you're going to be hearing is the pure sound of the shofar directly, and then in a moment it'll be mixed with the echo. So the Gemara now wants to know, so why at least shouldn't you be yotzei with at least the first part which was pure? So the Gemara says, ki kama rabba. So the Gemara says, fine. So at this point in time, we have now dismissed the idea that you can be yotzei with either hearing just the first half or the second half, much like the Gemara did in yesterday's daf as well. And the Gemara now is going to go over a totally different approach. Ki kama rabba b'tokeva olo nafshei. So rabba now is talking about a whole different scenario, and we're changing the entire ukimta of the scenario of blowing the shofar in the pit. What rabba meant is that you started by being in the pit, you yourself are blowing the shofar, and as you continue to blow the shofar, you leave the pit. You exit and you emerge from the pit while blowing the shofar. Under those circumstances, so now you're going to be yotzei. So the Gemara says, okay, ihachi my lameimra. So now at this point in time, now that we changed the entire ukimta, so is there a chiddush over here? Isn't that exactly what we would have expected? He's going with the shofar, and as we pointed out at the end of yesterday's daf, if you are together with the shofar in the pit, so you're hearing the direct sound of the shofar. And if you and the shofar are out of the pit, once again, you're hearing the direct sound of the shofar. So at this point in time, even though you started in the pit and you left the pit with the shofar while blowing it, so of course you're going to be yotzei. So Ma'ad Detema, the Gemara says, yeah, but the Havaminim would sound something like this. Zimnim demafik reisha ba'akati shofar babor v'kama arviv kala kamash molan. Well, because you are in motion, it could very well be that you and your shofar are not emerging at the same time. It could be that either you or your shofar are going to be leaving the pit at different points in time. And so therefore, maybe there'll be a mixture of direct and indirect sounds together. That's the Havamina. So the Chiddush is, no, we're not worried about such an occurrence. I'm Rav Yehuda. Gemara is going to go over a number of scenarios in which one could or cannot be yotzei, depending on the shofar that's being used. So the Gemara starts off with a statement of Rav Yehuda. B'shofar sha'ola lo yitaka. If the shofar belonged to a carbon ola. Rashi points out over here, Tasha Mechayim. So what you did is that you took the horn off the animal while it's still alive. De'ila la'achar zrika, because Rashi points out, as a technicality, if let's say you shechted the animal, you did the zrika zadam, ein mi'ila. So there is no din of mi'ila, not lo ba'ora v'lo ba'karneha. Not with the hide of the animal, not with the horns of the animal. That goes to the Kohanim as per the Gemara Menachos and the Gemara in Zvachim. Rashi quotes a drasha. So anyway, so the scenario over here where it would be subject to Mi'ila would be Mechaim, before it was Shechted. Okay. Out of curiosity, the Gemara does not really deal with this issue, but if you rip the horn off the animal, Mechaim, is the animal at this time considered Baal Mum? The Gemara doesn't discuss it. I'm just throwing it out there for consideration. Anyway, but the Gemara's point is as follows. So, v'im taka yatsa. So, Rav Yehuda now is arguing that if you were to blow with such a shofar, you're going to be yotzei. B'shofar shoshlamim lo yitaka. Now, if you did the same thing with a shofar shoshlamim, a carbon shlamim, so that, ideally, of course, don't use it. V'im taka lo yatsa. Here, you're not going to be yotzei. And so now we need an explanation. What's the difference between ol and shlamim? My tama ol abas me'ilahi. So the Gemara says the difference between Ol and Shlamim is just basic ideas regarding the Isser of Me'ila and the effect of Me'ila. So as we know, as it relates to a carbon, so a carbon is subject to Me'ila, but there's a fundamental difference between an ola, and a shlamim. Torah describing the iser of me'ila by carbon uses the term karche Hashem, which means that the only parts of the carbon that are subject to the iser of me'ila, only those parts of the carbon that are going up onto the mizbeach. As it relates to the carbon ola, so the entire animal goes up onto the mizbeach. So that means to say that the entire animal is subject to the iser of me'ila. As opposed to the karma shlamim, the only part of the shlamim that goes up onto the mizbech are the imurim. All other parts of the animal do not go up onto the mizbech, and therefore not subject to the iser of me'ila. That's point number one. Point number two that we have to remember and take into consideration is that when you violate the iser of me'ila, so aside from being subject to all the liabilities, which is that you have to pay, you have to make full restitution, plus you have to add another 20% of the value in which you got benefit from. And on top of that, you also have to bring a carbon ashram as well, ashram me'ila. But aside from all that, what ends up happening to the item that you were moel is it's yotzi lechulin. Now, so now, since the carbon ola is subject to the iser me'ila, so therefore the effect of violating the iser of me'ila is that it's yotzi lechulin. On the other hand, the shlamim, which is not subject to the formal iser me'ila, now, it is still, of course, a carbon, and you cannot misuse it, but it's not the formal Isra Me'ila, and therefore it's not Yotzei L'chulin. So this is exactly what the Gemara spells out as the difference between them. And so therefore, what Rav Yehuda is arguing now, attempting to argue, is that if you use the shofar of the Ola, so because it's subject to Me'ila, and you were Moel, therefore it's Yotzei L'chulin, and therefore one can fulfill the obligation of shofar. On the other hand, by shlamim, it is not yotzei lechulin. Therefore, it's still a chefzer shel iser. It's aser behana'a, and therefore one cannot fulfill his obligation. This is all as per the shita of Rav Yehuda. Maskev l'Rava, so Rava challenges. Emas ma'alabasa detaka. Wait 1 second. When are you mawal? After you blew the shofar, and so kikataka b'isurataka. At that point in time, the tkiya is done in a state of iser. The me'ila is only lifted after you misappropriate. And so therefore, there's some bias there as well. So therefore, Amarava, Echazeh, Lo Yatsa. So Rava then says that both the Shofar Shel Ola and the Shofar Shel Shlamim, you're not going to fulfill your obligation. Hada Amar, then upon further review and reconsideration, Rava changes his tune altogether. Echazeh, Echazeh, Yatsa. No, the truth of the matter is you're going to be Yotzei, both with the Shofar Shel Ola and the Shofar Shel Shlamim. So mitzvah lav lahenas nitnu. Because we have this idea that what you're doing right now is you're fulfilling a mitzvah. Meaning you're not getting hana'a from the item, but rather what you're doing is you're fulfilling the mitzvah. And we have a principle. The Gemara over here says it. Gemara says it in a number of different places. And that is mitzvah lav lahenas nitnu. That mitzvahs are not there in order to get benefit from. Rashi writes really in strong terms. Mitzvahs lav lahenas nitnu. Rashi divra maskolo lahenas nitnu. The fact that we fulfill mitzvahs in this world is not for us considered a tangible benefit in this world. It's a responsibility. And my translation over here is a little bit on the looser side, but it is a responsibility and it is not considered a tangible benefit. So when something is aser bihana'a, so that means to say that you can't get benefit from it, which would result in as a tangible benefit. A monetary, a financial, or tangible benefit from the item. Something that can be valued. However, when it comes to a mitzvah, so the mitzvah is not considered a tangible benefit that one receives in this world. And so therefore, if something is aser bahana, still it can be used for a mitzvah because the mitzvah is not considered a tangible benefit. It goes without saying, obviously, that the benefit that will be received from a mitzvah is going to be stored and rewarded in Olam Haba. But as far as this world is concerned, it is not viewed as a tangible benefit. With that stated, so now Rava says that the truth of the matter is that whether or not I use the shofar of an Ola or that of a shlamim, even though both of them are also b'hana, nevertheless we have the principle of mitzvot lav lahenas nitnu, and as a result of that, you're going to be yotzei. Now obviously, it is not ideal to use either one of them, but b'di'evit, you're going to be yotzei. Another comment by Rav Yehuda. I'm Rav Yehuda. B'shofar shel avodah zarah lo yitakam. When it comes to shofar shel avodah zarah, so one should not use it. So and Rashi says over here that this particular shofar was used for avodah zarah. As a result of that, it's also behana'a. Rashi quotes the Gemara in Avodah Zarah, Daf Nun Aleph. And so ideally, once you're not using it, v'intaka yatsa. But once you use it, b'dievet, you're yotzei. And the reason why, as we just got done saying, is mitzvah slav lehenes nitnu. Meaning, yes, it's of course aser ba'ana, but this is a mitzvah that I'm using it for, and therefore it is not a violation of the iser ana. B'shofar shel ir nidachas. Now, if the shofar happened to belong to shel ir nidachas, so lo yitaka v'intaka lo yatsa maitami ir nidachas kutu temechta shirei. Now, the reason why the shofar of ir nidachas is going to be pasul afilu b'dieved is because of the principle of ketut imechta shirei. We know that all the possessions of an ir nidachas, ir nidachas is a city where the majority of the city is over to Avodah Zarah. So therefore, those who are actually over to Avodah Zarah are going to be subject to the death penalty. And as far as all the possessions of everybody living in the city, it's going to be collected, brought into the center of the city, and it's going to be burned. It's omeid l'sreifa. Therefore, this shofar of an ir nidachas is omeid l'sreifa. And kol ha'omi l'sreifa k'sarv dame. And as a result of that, ketute mechza shiri doesn't have the shear. We learned in yesterday's daf, there is a minimum shear for the shofar. It has to be held in one hand with a little bit extending from both sides. So it has to be a little bit over a tefach. And because now it was that of an ir nidachas, therefore, does not have the requisite shear. Amar Rav Hamuda Hanamechavero, a person who is not allowed to get benefit from his friend via a neder, mutter l'tkowa lo tkiyo shemitzvah. So his friend can blow shofar for him, despite the fact that he can't get benefit from his friend. And again, falling in line with what we've been saying up until now, this is a mitzvah, it therefore does not violate an iser hana. Hamud arna mishofar mutter l'tkowa bo tkiyo shemitzvah. Similarly, if the person made a neder that he's not going to get benefit from that particular shofar, so once again, for the purposes of the mitzvah, you can go ahead and you can hear for the mitzvah because again, mitzvah slav lehenes nitnu. V'yamar Rav Hamuda ana mechaveru mazeh alav mechatus b'yemosak shamen v'lo b'yemosak chama. Person who is not going to be getting benefit from his friend via neder, so he can have his friend sprinkle on him the mechatus. Person is tummy mace, wants to remove the tumah from him, has to go through the process of the paraduma, being sprinkled on days 3 and 7, so he can have his friend do so, even though his friend is not allowed to provide for him benefit. Over here again, to go from a state of tumah to tahara, so that's considered a mitzvah, and therefore doesn't fall under the category of an iser hana. However, not during the summer months. In the summer months where it's really hot, so when you're going to be sprinkled with the mechatas, so you're going to be considerably cooled down, and so therefore, you are going to be getting benefit, physical, tangible benefit. And that's why your friend can't sprinkle the mechatas on you in the yemosa chama, in the summer months. Hamuda hana mi ma'ayan, person made a neder that he's not going to get a benefit from a particular spring. So tovabot tefillah shel mitzvah b'yemosak shamen v'lo b'yemosak achama. During the winter months where the only benefit for him to go into it, into the cold mikvah, is only going to be for him to become tahor. So that's not a physical benefit. The only benefit that's coming right now is the gain of going from tumah tahara. That's okay. On the other hand, if it's the hot summer and it's going to cool him down, that's a physical benefit. Therefore, it would be also during the summer. So that concludes the Gemara's discussion regarding mitzvah slav lehenes nitnu. The Gemara now is going to transition into a different major shas topic. So the following was sent to Avud Shmuel Kafavach Matzah Yatsam. Person was forced eating matzah. He's going to fulfill his obligation. There'll be yotzei zayin with the eating of that matzah, kafaman, who exactly forced him to eat it? Elam kafashade. Now, if in fact he was possessed at the time, right, what we would call today insanity. So v'hatani will enter the brayse itim chalam itim shota kishu chalam harei kepikeach lechol dvarav kishu shota harei kushota lechol dvarav. So we have a very basic rule, and that is that if a person is temporarily insane, so in his time of insanity, so he's considered lav bardas. In the times where he has his wits about him, he's mentally competent. So at that point in time, he's considered a bardas. And so therefore, over here, if in fact he was compelled by a shade to go ahead and to eat the matzah, so that is considered a moment of insanity. The person at that point in time is considered a shota, and as a result of that, So we wouldn't even be having a discussion whether he'd be Yotze or whether he wouldn't be Yotze. He's a Shota. He's not even Chayef. So the Gemara wants clarification. Who exactly forced him to eat the matzah? So Amar Rav Ashi Shekafu Parsim. Okay, so Rav Ashi says that he was forced by Persians to eat the matzah. All right. So what comes out over here is that if a person is forced to eat matzah, obviously we're talking about Lo Seder, and there's a mitzvah to eat matzah, but at this point in time, he did not do so on his own volition. He did so simply because he was forced. So under those circumstances, so he's Yotzei with the mitzvah of Achilas Matzah. Amar Rav Ashi, sorry, Amar Rava. Three lines from the bottom. Zos Amerza Tokele Shir Yotzah. So what comes out over here is the following. So in a similar scenario where a person is blowing shofar in Rosh Hashanah, and he's doing so l'shir, meaning he's not blowing shofar for the mitzvah, but rather he's blowing shofar just simply to produce a nice sound. So he does not have the mitzvah in mind. So, but nevertheless, as long as he is blowing shofar, so he is yotzi with his mitzvah. So pshita hainu hach, the Gemara says, good. So although that is a tremendous chiddush, but it's no bigger chiddush than the one of the eating of the matzah. And what the Gemara wants to know is that once we know that a person who's force-fed matzah and is eating it, obviously now with no kavanah, so he's yotzei the mitzvah of matzah. So once you know that, so you're now moving on to the next point. But the next part just seems to be a logical extension of what we just got done saying. If a person is blowing shofar with no kavanah Rosh Hashanah, so of course he's going to be yotzei. Hayno ach, it's the same thing. So the Gemara says, no, ma'od etema ha'asam echol matzah merachmena b'ha'achal. So the Gemara is suggesting, well, maybe there is a fundamental difference. Maybe. When it comes to matzah, so the Torah says simply to eat matzah, the Torah does not give any kind of instruction regarding the intention that one has to have. And so therefore, if the instructions are to eat matzah, and what you did is you ate matzah, albeit you were forced to do so, but you were yotzei. Ava hacha, but over here, as we now are on the top of the Amud Beis, zichron truksif. When it comes to the mitzvah of shofar, the Torah describes it as a zichron trua, which means that you have to remember, meaning that there is this sense of you have to have kavana as you're blowing the shofar. So, v'hai misasik ba'amahu. And over here, when the person is not having a mind to fulfill the mitzvah, he's just simply blowing a tune. So under those circumstances, it's just misasik ba'amah. So kamash malan. So that would have been the havamina. And the maskan is, that's exactly what Rav is coming to teach us, is that despite the fact that the Torah says zichron truah, if one blows the shofar in Rosh Hashanah, even without the kavanah to be yotzei with the mitzvah, nevertheless, he still will have fulfilled the mitzvah. So, lim memra, or alma, kazav rava mitzvah, zain shrichas kavanah. So what comes out over here is that according to Rava, mitzvahs do not require kavanah. And this brings us on to a fundamental discussion that the Gemara has. Gemara has this discussion in a number of locations. We saw this at the end of the Gemara Pesachim over here in Rosh Hashanah, now in the fourth parak. So we're reviewing the sugya, and as we pointed out, probably pointed out back then in Pesachim, I'll say it again now. Ideally, of course, it would be the best when one does a mitzvah to have kavana. Kavana over here is really simple. I'm doing this mitzvah because HaKadosh Baruch Hu was mitzvah for me to do the mitzvah. So ideally, of course, it is best to have kavana when doing a mitzvah. But what we're discussing right now is that in the absence of kavana, does that take away the mitzvah? Is it ki'ilu you have not done the mitzvah if in fact there was no kavana while having done the mitzvah? Otherwise stated, mitzvahs tzrichas kavana or mitzvahs eino tzrichas kavana. So do mitzvahs require kavana, yes or no? So as we're going to be seeing, it is subject to a debate. Right now, Rava seems to be clearly of the position, mitzvahs ein tzrichas kavana. So Eitz Vedekim right now is going to be challenging numerous times, three times in total. Number one, Hayakor b'tor v'gi yazman namikorim kibin libo yatsavim lav lo yatsa. A person's reading the Torah just for the sake of limud haTorah. It happens to be the morning. It happens to be that he's in the Parsha of Shema. And so, says the Mishnah, with Kavanah you're Yotzei, without Kavanah you're not Yotzei. Now, my love, Kivan, Libo, Latzeis. So, when we say Kavanah, what are we talking about? The simplest way to explain the Mishnah is he had Kavanah to fulfill the mitzvah, which means the mitzvah's Tzrichos Kavanah. So the Gemara is not necessarily Lo, Likros. Nah, could very well be that the Kavanah is just simply to read the word. So Likros HaKakari. So the Gemara says, well, that's a funny kavana. Meaning he has kavana to read the words. What is he doing right now? He's reading the words. How could you possibly say to me that he needs to have kavana to read when meanwhile that's exactly what he's doing? So the Gemara says, Bikori lahagia. Well, Yes, he's reading, but he's not reading. Meaning, right now, what he's doing is he's proofreading. So he's not really having intention to even do the act of reading. All he's doing right now is proofreading. And so therefore, as long as he has kavana to actually read, so that would be sufficient. So the Gemara says, a second proof, Tashma. And what comes out now, I'm sorry, let's just quickly say it over. So what comes out now is that we don't have a proof that you need kavana in order to fulfill the obligation. In other words, the kavana mentioned in that Mishnah is not kavana latzeis, but rather a modicum of kavana just simply to read the words. The Gemara does this a second time. Tashma. Haya over achari beis hakneses or sheya beis hamuch beis hakneses v'shama kol shofar kol megillah im kiven libo yatsa v'im lav lo yatsa. So this is our Mishnah. Mishnah we saw in yesterday's daf. And that is walking behind the shul, you hear the shofar. Walking behind the shul, you hear the Megillah. So if you have kavanah, you're yotze. And if you don't have kavanah, you're not yotze. And once again, my love, im kivein, libo, latzeis. So ostensibly, kavanah means that you had kavanah to fulfill the mitzvah. And once again, this would seem to be a really good proof that you need kavanah in order to fulfill your obligation. So lo, lishma, so the Gemara says, nah, kavanah over here just simply means you have kavanah to hear. So the Gemara says, the Hashama, well, what do you mean? You have kavanah to hear. Over here, that's what exactly you're doing. You are listening. So what do you mean you have intent to listen? That's exactly what you're doing. So Savar Chamar Ba'amahu. So the Gemara says at this point in time, not really sure what is producing the sound. So the only intention that you're giving right now is just to ensure that what you're hearing is actually the sound of a shofar being blown. So that's the kavanah that you're having. That's how we could interpret the Mishnah. And once again, we've deflected the proof. The Mishnah does not necessarily teach us that you have to have kavanah in order to fulfill the mitzvah. Eisvei. Now for the third time. Niskavin shomea b'lo niskavin mashmiya mashmiya b'lo niskavin shomea lo yatzachi iskavin shomea u'mashmiya. So in order to be yotzeh with the mitzvah of shofar, so both the mashmiya, the one blowing the shofar, and the shomea, the one hearing the shofar, they both need to have kavanah in order to fulfill the obligation. Now bishlam niskavin mashmiya b'lo niskavin shomea. So when we say that the shomea, the listener, does not have kavanah, so again, like we interpreted previously, it could very well mean that right now the kavanah that we're describing for him is that he doesn't know what sound is being produced. He's just simply listening carefully to make sure that's the sound of a shofar. But not the kavanah over here is not a description of being yotzei the mitzvah. Okay, we could say that, like we said previously. But Elan is kavin shomea, v'lan is kavin mashmiya, hefi mishkacha lehu. So, when we talk about the mashmiya, the one blowing the shofar, so again, so we're starting off with, for sure he knows he's blowing the shofar. So what kind of kavanah are we talking about? What's the lack of kavanah that's being described over here? So, lav b'tokei l'shir. So the Gemara says, presumably the lack of kavanah that would be unacceptable is that he's tokei l'shir, that he's blowing the shofar, not for the mitzvah, but just simply to make a nice pleasant sound. So that could be the pshat in the Mishnah, but if in fact that's the pshat, so then kavanah by definition has to be that he has kavanah latzeis to fulfill his obligation. So the Gemara says, "Dumaka deka menavech nevuche." The Gemara says, not necessarily. It could very well be that the kavanah over here is not the kavanah latzeis, but rather the kavanah over here is just simply to produce the right sounds. As we will be learning at the end of the Masechta, the sounds that are necessary for the shofar are specific. Yes, we're going to have a suffix exactly what the truest sounds like, but nevertheless, the idea is that there is a minimum sound that you need to hear. It could very well be that over here, the kavanah that we're describing, that we're demanding of the mashmiya, of the baal tokea, is just simply that he's producing the right sounds, but not necessarily that he's being motzi others in the mitzvah. Amalei Abaye. Okay, so what comes out now is as follows. Rava says that mitzvahs do not require kavanah. The Gemara really tested that based on a number of Mishnayos. Every single time the Gemara has deflected, comes out clearly over here is that Rav is of the position that mitzvahs ainus riches kavana. Now, as we transition into the next Gemara, which also happens to be a major sugya, so we're going to be transitioning from the topic of mitzvahs ainus riches kavana to the topic of Baal Tosef. We know that the Torah says that one is not allowed to add or take away from mitzvahs of the Torah. And right now, as Rashi points out over here, the assumption is, if that mitzvahs ain't on tzrichas kavanah, so as much as mitzvahs do not require kavanah, that means to say that if I am doing a mitzvah without the kavana, the Torah treats me as if I had kavana. Now Rashi describes it exactly in this kind of language. You can see Rashi right over here. So, but we are going to be assuming like that Mahalach and Rashi, and therefore what comes out now is the Gemara setting us up for the following question. And so picking it up, Amalei Abaye Elamiata Hayashen Bishmina Besukah Yelakeh. So that means to say that let's say you sleep in the sukkah on day number 8. We're talking about an Eretz Yisrael with the mitzvah of sukkah 7 days, unequivocally. The next day is what's called Shmini Atzeres. Shmini Atzeres is no longer a mitzvah of sukkah. So a person opts to sit in a sukkah in Eretz Yisrael on Shmini Atzeres, so he should be subject to Malkus. He didn't have Kavana. So right now the Gemara is asking, but you, Rav, are of the opinion that mitzvahs ain't Shrichas Kavana, and that means to say that when he's in the sukkah on day number 8, so he, even though he does not have kavana to fulfill the obligation, nevertheless, once you hold that mitzvah ain't shrichas kavana, not having kavana is in fact tantamount to having kavana. Rashi writes, I'm going to read the Rashi inside. Elamiata the sheim is kavin la mitzvah kim is kavin dame. It would be no different than actually having kavana. So now he has kavana to send the sukkah on day number 8. Meanwhile, the Torah told us to send the sukkah for 7 days, not for 8 days. Isn't this a violation of the Isra of Al Tosif? So Amalei Abaye Elamiata. No, I'm sorry, we did that. So Amar Lo, so they said to him, no. She'ani Omer, mitzvah sein over aleim ela bizmanam. So the response is that no. Yes, it's true that Rabba is of the position that mitzvah sein shrichas kavana. And yes, it's true that if you hold mitzvah sein shrichas kavana, so as long as I'm doing the mitzvah, it's ki'ilu I have kavana to do it. So, and yes, one could make the argument that if you sit in the sukkah or sleep in the sukkah on Shmini Atzeres, so you're in violation of Baal Tosif, but Rabba would respond to that and say, no, you're not going to be in violation of Baal Tosif. And the reason why you're not going to be in violation of Baal Tosif is because the 8th day is Lav Zman Sukkah. The only time that one could be in violation of Baal Tosif is only if you're Besoch Hazman. There has to at least be a time frame in which one could fulfill the mitzvah. The 8th day of Sukkot is not a time frame vis-a-vis the sukkah. And as a result of that, consequently, one is not going to be in violation of Baal Tosif. And the Gemara now is going to be spending the remaining section of the daf making exactly this point. That if something is chutz l'zman, one is not going to be in violation of Baal Tosif. So Meisav Rav Shimon Bar Abba, so the Gemara starts off with a braisa. So after the Kohen has the mitzvah of duchening, and he benches the Jewish people. And so now after saying the three psukim, he said, look, I'm on a roll. So as long as I gave him all the bracha, so I'll continue to do so. And so, kigon Hashem Elokei Avosechem, Yosef Alechem. So, and the Gemara just gives an example, the beginning of Dvarim. Anyway, so how do I know that he's not allowed to do that? Tamalamar, lo sosifu al hadavar. And that would be a violation of Baal Tosif. And the Gemara now says, good. So now we know that when the Kohen adds a bracha at the end, so that's a violation of Baal Tosif. And the Gemara is bothered, v'achakim debarchlei, avr leizmane, he finished duchening. So now aren't we outside the window of opportunity? Viktani da avar. And meanwhile, the Braisa says really clearly that he is in fact going to be subject to the Isra Baal Tosif. So the Gemara says, Hach b'maiskin and b'dol siyem. So the Gemara tries to give an answer. Well, maybe he didn't finish. Maybe somewhere in the middle. So the Hatanya siyem. The Braisa says, no, he concluded. So siyem bracha achas. Well, maybe we could say that he only finished one bracha. The Hatanya siyem kol birchosav. Again, we have another Braisa that says it really clearly. He finished all of his brachos. So shaniachi came into Elam Esram Alei Tzibur Achrina. Hader mevarech kule yom eizmanehu. Answers the Gemara that really he finished all three brachas. He's still besoch hazman. How can we call it besoch hazman? We are going to be calling it besoch hazman because all the while that the day is still going on, and another minion can grab him, use him to give a bracha, and so therefore this is still qualifies as besoch hazman. And so what the Gemara now is arguing that the Kohen, the reason why he can't give a bracha after he finishes duchening is because he's still besoch hazman. How could you call it besoch hazman? He finished the bracha? The Gemara's answer is no. Yes, it's true. He finished this particular duchening, but another shul can grab him, another minion can grab him. And so therefore, since he has another opportunity, another possible opportunity to duchen later today, he's still called besoch hazman. The Gemara says this idea that you're considered besochas man, minat temra. Now, how do I know that this is in fact so? Did not. Gemara is going to be quoting a Mishnah. This Mishnah, we went over already a number of times. We saw this back in Zvachim. We also saw this Mishnah back in Erevim as well. So the idea over here is that I got the bloods of various carbonas got mixed up together. Some carbonas need only one application on the Mizbech. Some carbonas require four. And this is a bit of an oversimplification because some require four in four different corners. Some require four, meaning in the two opposing sides. Regardless, the point right now is that some carbonates require one application, some require four. If I have bloods of various carbonates that get mixed up, it happens to be that both of them only require one application. So the solution is very simple, says the Mishnah, and that is just do one application. And matandal be matandal, yinasim be matandalin. If I have dam of four getting mixed up with dam of four, so then the solution is very simple. So then you just simply apply in all four corners. Now, the truth is that it's not that simple. You have to assume over here that when they get mixed together, you have an even distribution of the various bloods, so that when you do a application in one of the corners, it actually will represent the bloods of both of the carbonas. But, okay, let's leave that alone. Matandal b'matanachas. But here's the excitement, and here's what the Gemara now wants to delve into. What happens when I have the dam of one carbon, which requires four applications, getting mixed with the dam of a carbon that only requires one application? So what should you do? Should you only do one, or should you do all four? Rabbi Eliezer Amar Yinasnu B'Matandala, it's Rabbi Eliezer says do all four corners. Rabbi Yoshua Amar Yinasnu B'Matanachas, Rabbi Yeshua says only do one corner. Amala Rabbi Eliezer Harehu Over Al Bal Tigra. So Rabbi Eliezer says that one will be in violation of Bal Tigra. Meaning, if I don't put in all four, so then the carbon that required four, you are going to be deficient of that which you're required to do. Torah says to hit four corners. You didn't hit all four corners. Amal Rabbi Yoshua Reu Over Abal Tosif. What do you mean? One of the bloods in this mixture only requires one application. If I go ahead and do it in the three other corners, I'm going to be in violation of Abal Tosif. And so over here, it really seems to be a push of a debate. Meaning each of the Tanaim are now attacking the same problem, making basically the same point, just simply going in two different directions in terms of we should be focusing on the Bal Tigra or the Bal Tosif. And the Gemara continues this debate. Amalei Rav Elazar, lo nemra Bal Tosif ela keshuva ba'atzma. So Rav Elazar says, look, I only think that there's going to be an Isser of Bal Tosif only when the Matan Echad is by itself. Amalei Rav Yishua lo nemra lo Bal Tigra ela keshuva ba'atzma. And Rabbi Yeshua basically makes a parallel argument in the other direction. I only think that the Isra Bal Tigra is only when it is by itself, not B'tarovis, the Ode. Okay, so in round one of the argument seems to be a push. The Gemara continues. Amar Rabbi Yeshua Kishalo Natata Avarta Bal Tigra V'lo Asita Ma'asecha. So, and Rabbi Yeshua says, look, in my viewpoint, do one application and stop. It's true that for the Dam Dalid, so you've diminished, but you've done so passively. You haven't actively violated the Isser. So, kishinatata avarta bal tosif. However, you now, when you go around and do the other three applications, so you're going to be actively violating bal tosif. Ve'asita masecha biyadecha. Okay. And so the last argument, which certainly seems to be favoring the shita of Rabbi Yeshua, is that it's better to violate the Isra Bal Tigra passively rather than violate the Isra Bal Tosif actively. Anyway, Ad Kan Divrei HaMishnah, we are really focusing on one point to extract from this Mishnah, and the Gemara spells it out. Ve'ha'acha kevin di'arvelei matan mi'bechor, avrelei lizmanei. So over here, the Bechor is just an example of a carbon where it's matan echad, and so when you do it, avrelei lizmanei. As so at that point in time, the mitzvah now is done. Meaning, aren't we now post-zman? And meanwhile, b'ktani da'avar misha bal tosif. And meanwhile, clearly, there is agreement amongst the Tanaim that one is in violation of bal tosif. Again, the disagreement is whether or not it's better to violate bal tosif or bal tigra. But certainly, everyone's in agreement that you're in violation of bal tosif. So how could it be? Meaning, if you're chutz l'zman, if you're outside the framework of time of doing the mitzvah, like sitting in the sukkah on Shmini Atzeres, so, and there you're not in violation of Al Tosif. So over here, can't we make the exact same argument? To which the Gemara says, Lam Visham Darmina came into Ilam Isramale, Bukhra Achrina, Hadar Mazamine, Kula Yama Zmane. So the Gemara says that the reason why you're not Chutz Zman is because if another Bechor were to enter into the Beis HaMikdash, so the Kohen would have to go and go through the Avodah again. Shafting, Kabbalah Saddam, Zrika Saddam. So over here, because there is a possibility for another opportunity later that day, you are not chutz lizman. So that is why it's another raya to show that as long as the opportunity can present itself again later, you're still considered besocha zman. Mimai, the Gemara says, okay, I hear you, but there really is another way to learn the Mishnah. Dilma kasavra Rabbi Yeshua, mitzvah sover aleim afilu shelo bezmanan. So can't it be that Rabbi Yeshua is of the position that a mitzvah is subject to the iser of Baal Tosif, even if it's shelo bezmanan? Meaning, can't we just simply say that he disagrees with the entire premise? So anan hachi kamrin. So the Gemara says, you misunderstood. Rav Shemen bar Abba, my time, ashavik masisan, umosim mi braisa. Lusiv mi masnisan. Look, Rav Shemen bar Abba was the one who originally asked the question. Meaning, go back up to the midpoint of this amud, right? Where Mesav Rav Shemen bar Abba, where he asked the question. Now, at that point in time, he was bothered by the fact that that one is going to be in violation of Baal Tosif, even if seemingly the Zman is over. Now, at that point in time, he had an option of what he could have cited as to what his kasha was going to be. Now, it happened to be that he cited the Brisa dealing with the Kohen and the Duchening. But meanwhile, he could have quoted the Mishnah about the bloods getting mixed together, the Matan Echab with the Matan Dal getting mixed together. So why did he opt choosing the Brisa of the Kohen? Why didn't he use the Mishnah of the Matan Echab and Matan Dal? So the Gemara says, exactly. My time is Shavik Misnissen, Mosin Mi Brisa. Why did he leave the Mishnah and ask for the Brisa? Losin Mi Misnissen. And why didn't he ask for the Mishnah? Masnisa, my time alone, Mosiv. He didn't ask for the Mishnah. Came in the Elam Israel, Bukhra, Achrina, by Mazamine, Kula Yome, Zmanihu. So the Gemara says, because from the Mishnah, look, I know I'm Besoch Zman because I know that if a Bukhra comes, you must go ahead and you must do the Avodah with the next Bukhra that comes. So every part of the day is considered Besoch Zman. Braisa Nami came in the Elam Israel, Tibur, Achrina, Hadar Mavar, Kula Yome. Zmane. So can we make the same argument regarding the Brisa? Meaning that if the Kohen has an opportunity to duchen later in the day, so he's going to have to do so. So why did Rav Shemen bar Abba feel that the question is stronger from the Brisa over that of the Mishnah? Gemara goes on to explain. Rav Shemen bar Abba asam lo sagi de lo yahiv. Rav Shemen bar Abba says, look, if we were asking from the Mishnah, so I would tell you that it's considered besoch hazman, because when another Bechor is presented to the Kohen, he does not have an option. He must bring the Bechor. So therefore, the balance of the day is considered Besoch Hazman. But Hacha, but in the case of the Kohen, Ibai La Mevarech. So, but when it comes to the Kohen, so he really has an option. Meaning, he doesn't have to Dochen. Obviously, it's an opportunity. Obviously, it's a mitzvah opportunity for him to do so, but he doesn't have to Dochen. And so therefore, he thought that the question would come out much stronger from the Brisa than that of the Mishnah. Meaning from the Mishnah, there was no question that that's considered Besoch Hazman, because when given the opportunity to go ahead and offer a Bechor later on, the Kohen just can't simply say, oh, I'd like to, but I'd rather not. In other words, at that point in time, he's the Kohen, he has to do the Avoda. But in the case of Duchening and giving a Bracha, so the Kohen does not have to go ahead and do it later on. And he can, if he'd like to, he can decline. And so that's why Rav Shemen bar Abba thought that if we're going to use any source to indicate that afterwards it is considered chutz mizman, so the case of the Kohen would be a better indication. That's why he asked from there. Anyway, what comes out over here now is that as long as there's an opportunity to do so later that day, that's considered besoch hazman. Masha Enkin, when it relates to sleeping in the sukkah and Shmini Atzeres, that's chos hazman, and that's why one is not going to be in violation of Baal Tosif. We're going to pause over here. We're going to pick it up with Rava Amar tomorrow. In the meantime, however, let's quickly recap, let's review. We went over, in the beginning of Chav Chesem and Aleph, the statement of Rava that if you're blowing the shofar both in the pit and outside the pit, you're going to be Yotzei, as opposed to blowing the shofar before Amud HaShachar and after Amud HaShachar, you're not going to be Yotzei. And the distinction is, well, the Gemara at first thought the case was the where the shofar was in one place and you were in and out of the board, but the Gemara ends up giving a different ukimta, and that is you're the one who's actually blowing the shofar. And you were with the shofar in the bor, you were with the shofar out of the bor, and therefore Yotzei. Either it's pasha, the Gemara says, it's not so pasha. Anyway, continuing on the in terms of a review, the Gemara quotes a number of halachas b'shem Rabbi Yehuda. Number one, a seemingly a distinction can be made or should be made between blowing shofar of a karban ola versus that of a karban shlamim. Karban ola is subject to me'ilah, and since you were mol behektesh, therefore it's yafsa l'chulin. So therefore, of course, ideally you shouldn't use it for the shofar, but b'di'evit it would work. Masha'in came in the shlamim, not subject to me'ilah, not going to be yafsa l'chulin. That was all the starting point of Rabbi Yehuda. But after a little bit of redaction, Rava ends up saying that, look, of course, ideally you shouldn't use the shofar of not an ola, not a shlamim. But we have this principle of mitzvah lav lehenes ninu, and therefore, since this is not considered a hana, a mitzvah is not considered a tangible benefit in this world, so therefore, b'di'evit your yotzei. Other examples of mitzvah lav lehenes ninu, so the Gemara gives the shofar shel avodah zarah, shofar shel ir nidachas, you have another issue over there in terms of why it won't work, and that's ketutim echta shiure, but as it relates to shofar shel avodah zarah, so again, ideally, of course, you shouldn't use it, but b'di'evit it would work, because mitzvah lav lehenes ninu. Another application of this principle is, let's say you're not allowed to get hana from somebody else through a neder, and meanwhile you want to hear him blow shofar, by all means you could do so. That's not considered hana. Similarly, if you make a neder against a shofar, once again, the shofar can be used because that's not considered hana. The Gemara also gives another application of this principle. Let's say you are not going to get hana from a ma'ayan, so nevertheless you could use it in order to tovel. But as long as you're not getting a physical benefit, if it's the summer months and it's cooling you down, so then you can't do. Okay. That's all the Amud Aleph. On the very bottom of the Amud Aleph, the Gemara engages in a major discussion and a basic discussion regarding whether or not mitzvahs require kavana. Rava is of the position, Avua de Shmuel is of the position that for matzah, if you're force-fed matzah, you're going to be yotzei. Similarly, if you're blowing shofar without the kavana of being yotzei zayin with the mitzvah, so you're going to be yotzei. The Gemara said that you might have had a havamina that the two are different based on the wording in the psukim, but according to Avuah d'Shmuel, it's the same. Hainu hach, it's the same thing, and it's predicated on the principle of mitzvos ein tzrichos kavana. Mitzvos do not require kavana. Ideally, of course, you should have kavana, but mitzvos ein tzrichos kavana. The Gemara challenges. One of the challenges comes from our Mishnah, which is why it comes up over here in our Gemara. But meanwhile, the conclusion of the Gemara is mitzvos ein tzrichos kavana, which then segues into the last part of today's daf. If mitzvos do not require kavana, so then how could it be? Why would it be that if a person is going to be sitting in the sukkah on Yom HaShmini, again, not here in Chutz Arutz, but in Eretz Yisrael, where there is no mitzvah whatsoever to be in the sukkah on Shmini Atzeres, so he seemingly should be in violation of Baal Tosef. Because if mitzvos ain't shrichas kavana, so then being in the sukkah would be tantamount to actually having kavana. And doing so on a day where it would be a hosafa to the mitzvah, so seemingly it would be an issue of Baal Tosef. The Gemara's response is that Baal Tosef only is when you are besoch hazman. Shmini Atzeres is chutz hazman, and since it's chutz hazman, not eligible, not subject to Baal Tosef. It's only besoch hazman. And for the remaining part of today's daf, a number of sources of this idea that you are besoch hazman. Kohanim duchening is considered besoch hazman because you have an opportunity later on. If in fact somebody comes over and gives you an opportunity to duchen later on, you could take advantage. Also, avoda is considered besoch hazman because even as you did the hazah with the bechor, even though it only requires a hazas achas, only one application on the mizbeach, but since if a bechor later on comes along, so you have to do the avoda with that one, that also is considered besoch hazman.